I'm not going to quit. I'm not going to stop. And I'm going to listen, and I'm going to share these stories, and I'm going to shine a light on them. I feel the doom. I feel it in my heart. I'm even crying right now talking about it. I'm not doing this for recognition. I'm not doing this for money, or I don't even know what the other good things that could happen are, but I'm doing it so that I can meet people like you, Daphne, so that I can meet as many people as possible and hopefully give a little bit of hope. And I just, you know, I think that fear of not being able to tell these stories, or not getting them out there, or not being able, not having time, or I don't know, it instead of shutting me down, it makes me want more. It makes me want to listen more. It makes me want to do more, to create more.
Hi, I'm Daphne Cohn. Welcome to the Creativity Habit Podcast, conversations with the artists and makers who use creativity to innovate, disrupt, and elevate. Dana Ruggiero is an environmentalist and a filmmaker. She makes films about the lives of those suffering from climate change and environmental degradation like fracking and coal ash. While filming, Dana has faced physical dangers, being bullied and threatened by men who didn't want what they were up to made public. She suffered from headaches, nausea, and nosebleeds filming in some of the most toxic areas of the United States, and she's had to overcome her own internal fears, like not being good enough, not making enough of a difference, and worries that her work was all garbage. Despite all of it, Dana has maintained an absolute commitment to her artistic calling. Here, Dana shares how her mother's cancer diagnosis made her an activist, the story of her first clueless endeavor into filmmaking, how she went from cleaning zoo cages to appearing on NBC, CBS, ABC, and CNN, and what keeps her creating when the pain of everything runs deep. You can find Dana and her work over at climatelisteningproject.org. May you enjoy this conversation, and may it inspire you to make your thing and change your world. Hello, Dana. Welcome to the Creativity Habit Podcast. It's really wonderful to have you here today.
Daphne, I'm honored. Thank you.
You do very powerful work in the world as a filmmaker, as an environmentalist. And what I like to do is go back to the beginning, looking for how this passion and this, the creativity in being a filmmaker, the passion for the environment, if that was there when you were a little kid, how it showed up.
You know, at that time, I always loved nature. I loved animals. And I think that having access to nature and having access to travel, having the opportunity and the privilege to be able to travel from a young age, really opened me up to different places and people and art and books. My parents were always very supportive of me and my creative and learning endeavors. And, you know, I would say probably through theater at that time was the way that I just thought that I would go. I loved it. And I loved being in that community of artists at that time.
You traveled a lot, as you said, as a kid. And I've heard you say with running, because you're an amazing runner, but you took your first trip on your own. So a lot of times it was with your family. You took your first trip on your own the summer before your senior year in high school, and you went to Ecuador. Why Ecuador?
You know, Ecuador was a place that in my research I found to be open to who I was. And it was very important to me at that time not to make a bad, you know, influence or to hurt the people that I was with. And I was a vegetarian at that time. And Ecuador was one place that I had read about that they wouldn't be hurt. They were okay with me saying I'm a vegetarian and I'm not okay with what I've been served. You know, I didn't want to be in any situations where I was insulting my host or hurting people, but I also wanted to be free and be able to be a vegetarian and to think about those things at that time and explore who I was becoming at that time, which was more of an environmentalist and an activist than the runner that I had always been. I could not wait to go there and see what I could learn.
So when you came back from Ecuador, do you remember the moment when you arrived back home?
I do. I was changed. You know, I had my mother from a young age. When I was 11 years old, she was given 6 months to live. And she lived. And then a couple years later, it happened again. And a couple years later, and a couple years later. And so I think that also influenced my desire to meet as many people as possible, to listen to their stories, to know what they're thinking about, because I realized that everybody has a struggle. And we don't always talk about those things. And that's why also I didn't want to hurt people in Ecuador by saying, hey, I don't agree with you, or I don't want to do that. I wanted to go to a place where I wouldn't hurt anybody, and I could get to know their culture, get to know them. It's something that I always try and strive to be better at, is to be more open and to just explore and be curious and listen to people.
Before I move forward with that, I actually want to back up a minute to what you said about your mom, because your mom was given this diagnosis. She was told she has 6 months to live several times throughout your life, and kept, you know, was alive your whole childhood. And is your mom still alive?
Yes, she's kayaking in Florida today.
Yeah, amazing. So, like, what impact do you think that had on you, knowing that from a very young age, the vulnerability of life and death?
It definitely drove me to participate in theater, even though I was scared, or to go to Ecuador, even though I was scared. It was an unknown. And it has been something that has driven me throughout my life to live every day and to be curious. I really am interested in what people are thinking. I think that there's a dynamic where even the people that we're closest to, we don't know everybody else's thoughts. After Ecuador, I realized that it wasn't just the people in my life, but it was everybody that I really wanted to meet. I wanted to listen to them. I wanted to help if I could. I think it made me an activist. I think it made me want to take action about the things that I care about today and not wait until tomorrow, because you never do know what is going to happen.
It's so powerful that you had that knowing from early on throughout your whole life. It's interesting, and we'll see more of how that has shown up in your life over the years. So stepping out from Ecuador, which was this moment, this time in that opened you up to the whole world. You went
yes.
from, this is my community, I live in this community, to I want to always be traveling. I want to always be meeting people all over the world. So there was a sense of wide open expansiveness. And then you went to college, but still on a running scholarship. But during that time, you took an internship for a zoo, working for a zoo.
I was volunteering.
Volunteering, okay. Why did you choose the zoo?
I remember being at college in the first month, and there was a volunteer fair, and there was a woman there with animals. I always loved nature. I loved the environment. I became a vegetarian at 12 years old after my mom was diagnosed. I saw that woman at the volunteer fair with these animals. She had like a few animals with her, and I remember seeing her from across the room and seeing these animals and thinking to myself, oh my goodness, like I felt something so powerful at that time. Nothing really stuck with me as much as I knew the moment that I went to the zoo, the moment that I saw her, that this was what I was supposed to do.
Describe that moment a little more for me. Like what was that knowing like?
There was just no accepting no, basically. I went up to her and just said, I'm going to volunteer and I'm studying communications. I'm willing to help in any way that I can. I can volunteer cleaning the animal cages. I can volunteer in the communications department. I can volunteer with events. I will work for free for you. Please let me come out there and help in any way that I can.
It wasn't long, it sounds like, before you started actively campaigning to save endangered species, like getting on television. And you're 19 years old at this time, right?
Yes.
And you're on television. How did that happen? How did you go from like all clean cages to I'm on like NBC talking about saving endangered species?
There was a need for getting these animals in the media at that time. And this was 1999. Yes, the internet was around, but it wasn't what it is now. We didn't have these social media tools that we have, and we didn't have online news. We didn't have, you know, the podcasts that we have now. So television at that time was still very much the way that people received information, print media, magazines, newspapers. There was a need for somebody to go to these television stations that were hours away. And so basically what I would have to do is I would have to get up at 2, 3 a.m., go to the zoo, get the animals, and then drive an hour or more to go to a TV station to be there by 6 a.m., to be on at 7 a.m. on the morning show. Or
this, and these happened. Animals, like, they would be in cages in your car, and you would drive to the studio and bring these animals into the studio.
Yes, there was no van at that time. There was nobody that could transport them for me. And so, yeah, I had tigers and monkeys and snakes and everything you could possibly imagine in the back of my car. And then also, after I had been there like a year or so, I started taking the animals home with me the night before, so that I wouldn't have to bother with, you know, the zookeepers to get me in there to get, help me get the animals. We'd do it the night before, and then I would just drive to the TV station. But there was nobody that could do it, nobody that wanted to do it. And we were going to have to possibly cancel or not be able to say yes to these TV requests that we were getting. And so I just said, you know, I'll do it. I will go. And I would study. I would study these animals. I learned so much about conservation at that time. I learned about endangered species, local species, and I loved having the opportunity to go. And then I would have, you know, when you see the morning news or the nightly news, there's interviews that happen, but they're very short. A few minutes in TV time is a long time, and I would have this short amount of time to talk about why people should care about these animals around the world. And I would try my best to get people to engage with these animals by seeing them, and hopefully that they would be inspired by these animals. So I was this connector. All I did was show up. You know, I would drive them there, I would show up, and I would say, here, look, and this is why you should care.
I just have to back up for 1 minute. I just want to get this image, like, you're in your house, and, like, maybe you get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, and there's a tiger, like, in the living room, in the cage. Like, it's just hanging out there.
Well, the baby tigers, I would let them roam free. This is not something that I recommend. I would have animals, porcupines and snakes and everything you can possibly imagine at my house.
At some point during this time, I heard you say in an interview that there was a shift that happened, because you said, I couldn't just talk and tell people what to do. I needed to listen as well. And this was a pretty big turning point in your life. So what was happening in your interactions with people that clued you into, wait a minute, it's not just telling people what to do, I need to listen?
Well, it was, I think, a couple different things. And one was that I had been taking animals on television from the time I was 19 years old until I was, I think, 27, 26 or 27, realizing that my life goal was not to just take animals on TV. This was not who I was. This was not what I wanted to do. I'm glad that I had the opportunity to do these things. Like, I just didn't know that I was making enough of an impact, getting on TV and saying, this is what the problem is, this is what you need to do about it, without knowing enough about people. I had been talking and yes, reading and researching, but mostly going on TV and telling people what to do. And I knew that that wasn't what I was supposed to do. And so I decided to go back to school and get my master's in applied science and study law and study policy and study project management and how to make real change.
Where was listening inside of that?
When I went back to school, I took a job with a group called Green Festival, and I would travel to New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle, Chicago, Washington, D.C., and do these events with leaders in conservation, sustainability, animal welfare, and I picked up a camera for the first time and went behind the camera. So as I was studying how to make more change, I also was learning from some of the most visionary people that I know to this day that about how they were making change. And I would film them. I had no idea what I was doing, but I would film them. And I was able to partner with Discovery Communications to get these videos online. And then I quit Green Festival and I went on my first tour and I listened to farmers and food producers, people in food deserts setting up community gardens, people at schools, biodynamic wineries, everything to do with food that you could think about. And I traveled around California for 3 weeks. Just listening, just filming and listening. My first interview that I filmed ever was Bill McKibben. And I put Bill McKibben with various different people and would just say, just talk. Let me see what happens. And the things that would come out of those conversations inspired me. All of these people inspired me. And so I was able to learn at that time more than I had in all of the years of just talking.
I want to go back to that first interview. So for anyone who doesn't know, Bill McKibben is, he's an author, he's an environmentalist, he's the creator of 350.org, which is the first planet-wide grassroots climate change movement. You said to Bill, hey, how did that conversation go? You'd never done this before. How did that happen? Tell me like what you said and what he said.
I just set up this GoPro with my friend who I partnered with. We just wanted to put him with somebody else and give him an opportunity to talk. And he said, yes, he said, I'd love to. I took him up there and I didn't have any lights. I didn't have good sound, but I didn't have all the other, anything. I had no idea what I was doing. And I would just set up the camera and say, okay, go.
How did that feel, that first filming?
Oh my goodness, it was amazing. I immediately after that was driven to not only just be in front of the camera, but to be behind that camera to learn as much as I could from everybody that I could and help to share these stories. I had developed a lot of connections by that time around the country and around the world. I knew I could help get their stories out, and I felt the need that I had to. It was wonderful. My job that I was tasked with was getting people to Green Festival. I was the national communications director. That was my job. So doing something like that and filming somebody at the event that would be released after the event, it felt empowering because it was more about the message. It was more about me providing that bridge to be able to get that message out there in that critical time than just promoting an event, which is also very important to bring people together. But it felt like I was, like what I was doing, it just felt like what I was doing was right and that it was helpful and that made me feel good.
Did you know in that moment, I'm a filmmaker, I want to be a filmmaker? Did you have a moment where you're like, I'm a filmmaker?
I'm going to be really honest with you. What I think happened was that I thought, I never want to stop learning the tools that I can use to share these messages. I want to try every way. I mean, I'm even driven today to write, to use art in different ways, to try to figure out what the next thing is. So film, in my mind, was something so far off because I didn't know that I wanted to make 2-hour film that would be shown in movie theaters. To me at that time, it was more about getting the messages out there. Now I share my videos on Facebook. People can go to my Facebook page or to my website and watch any of my videos for free. There isn't a paywall between the community and these videos and these films because my goal was to make change, to show the realities. And I knew that the filmmaking industry is a very male-driven industry. It's a very big deal. We've seen this past year with Wonder Woman, major box office film that's directed by women. Now with Netflix and Hulu and all of these other tools, it's a lot easier for documentary filmmakers and filmmakers to get their films out there into the hands of people. But I knew that I just wanted to share these stories and I didn't want a paywall in between the community and these stories because it often makes it inaccessible for the communities that should deserve to see them or have their stories told or whatever. I mean, I wanted it to be for everybody.
Yeah. So first, so people know, is climatelisteningproject.org, is that the best place to be able to see all of these things, to see the videos you're making?
Yes.
Okay. I want to spend some time talking about the filmmaking process. Now, you said that when you just started out, you had no idea what you were doing. You'd strapped on a GoPro and just told the people you're filming, just talk. So since then, you've done a lot of filming. What are some of the most important things that you've learned since you started about making film?
Yeah, when I started out, I was just encouraging the folks that I was filming to have conversations, to see what they would say. And then I started to ask more questions. And then I started to think about different ways that I could film different things. So I had kind of ideas around different videos with a lot of different people in them, being able to still listen to people and give people an opportunity to talk and share their stories. So I often needed other people, and I don't know everything about the different ways that we could be creative, from, you know, using drones to get aerial footage, or even airplanes and getting aerial footage sometimes, working with animators to create different kinds of content in the videos, working with people that are verite style documentary filmmakers, to working with people just starting out, filming a lot of different interviews and compilations and combining that with different B-roll. So I've really started to enjoy collaborating with more than 30 different artists and filmmakers around the country for the Climate Listening Project. And that has been educational, and it's been so much fun.
Do you find sometimes, though, I mean, you've had the vision for the project and you go about creating it and you're finding all the different people who have a similar vision, or they want to tell similar stories, and there's diversity among them. Do you find that there can also be, despite all of that, a clashing of the ego? Like, do you find it hard sometimes to share your vision with somebody else, have their input or their feedback?
Oftentimes, you know, what I say to folks is, I want this to be something that is yours as well. I want these people to be as engaged and to feel like they have the opportunity to be creative, to make it theirs, to bring some of their personal expertise or vision to it, so that they are excited to share it, that they're excited to say, hey, look at this new documentary I made, and they're very much a part of it as I am, or as the advisor, or the people that are featured, the people that we listen to, as well as the audience that watches it. It's always fun to learn from all of these different people and to try new things and to always be open to, how do we make this better? How do we make more of an impact each time? Like, we're just constantly working to make things better, to make it better for the people that we're interviewing, to make better art, to make better conversations happen after people watch it.
So you mentioned making better art and having more of an impact. Do you find sometimes that you have this vision for what you want to create, and then there's the thing that you actually create, and that there's a gap? Like, is there ever a gap between, oh, this is what I wanted, but I couldn't quite capture that? Or are you able to capture what it is that you want to get on the screen?
I like to think that I've been able to get my vision to the screen. It's sort of a never-ending process, hopefully, of getting this story out there so that it's a timeless piece. And that's really, for me, how I've gauged the success of it, is not just, is this my opus? My goal was get these stories out there. And so when I look at the people that are using them, the ways that they're being shared, that's the measure. When a video I made with, you know, an interfaith group is distributed to 4,000 churches around the country, was that my opus? I don't know. But is it useful? Yes. Could it be better? Probably. But I never try to let perfection be the enemy of good and getting the work out there.
I want to get these stories out there so that they're timely and that they are useful for the people that need them now.
I think the thing that I hear the most actually in that response is these films truly aren't about you as a filmmaker. They are about the thing that you're making a film about. They're about the subject. They're about the impact the film can have. It's not a reflection on how great a filmmaker you are, but how much of a difference the story you tell with the film can make. That's what you're really going for.
100%. That's why if I receive interview requests, if I have opportunities to show my films at events or at film festivals, I mean, these are great things, but I go and I do these things so that I can introduce these messages and these people to new audiences with these environmental films. I don't want to preach to the choir, as they say. I want these to get out in these new people's hands that might be able to use them to accelerate those conversations in their community. So I know that these agriculture films, they were being shown to conventional farmers. And I remember one time being so excited that these cultivating resilience films had been shown to 100 conventional farmers. Now that's not, wow, we reached 1 million platinum views or something, made millions of dollars. That was, wow, 100 conventional farmers, if a few change a few of their practices, it can make a major impact on a community, on a region, on the health of the soil, on the health of the community there. And so when I know that these films are being shown at the churches, at events, at film and different groups and colleges and universities, all these different groups have a unique view in the world. They're connected by these things, though. The food we eat, the bird we love, our children. And so the story we want, it's really these women's stories. That's what it's about. People having an opportunity to see the reality that these women are dealing with across the United States and realize that maybe it's not just them. It's that their own story, watching this brings out their own story that they're willing to share or willing to at least feel, you know, wow, I'm not alone in this. This is something that's happening across the United States. We are already seeing the impacts of climate change. We are seeing the impacts on the health in our communities from the fossil fuel industry, and that we can work together. Wow, look at these women. They're working together. They're taking action. They're winning. There is hope. These are the steps that we can take. They're showing the stories, not only exposing the story, but really showing how anybody can do this themselves, be inspired by these people.
Okay, I want to just underscore one other piece there, which is having a vision that's really grounded in reality. Because I think in today's day and age, with all these crazy numbers that we have, like, oh, you could have 100,000 followers on Instagram, or you could have this many likes, or it's really easy to get lost in that and to actually have your vision of what you're creating get clouded over or get lost in this big numbers game that is not at all necessarily about real true impact. So I just think I wanted to underscore it to say this is paying attention in my mind to what is truly important. 100 conventional farmers, that's a lot of farmers. Like, so it may not be 1,000 or 100,000, but 100 is a lot. And to remember that, as I'm saying as much for myself as it is, as I might be saying it for someone listening, to just remember what it is that we really want to achieve, like what kind of impact we're wanting to make, and not get so lost in these really grand, big numbers and everything else that kind of happens in our culture today.
Beautiful. Yes.
So question more around the women in the documentary, in the story we want. I'm curious about when you're filming them, do you find that there are times when you're talking with these women and then you start rolling the film and something changes, like they shift a little, or how do you help them be at ease on film?
You know, of all the things, this is the one thing that, like, I hear the most. I mean, people say, oh, Dani, you know, you're my favorite filmmaker, or say, I mean, they say really, really nice things a lot, that probably more than I deserve, I know, but the thing that I hear most, that I appreciate the most, is just that, you know, I'm able to somehow to be there with these women and allow them to be their whole selves and to be present. We don't think about the camera. We don't think about what people are watching or thinking. We kind of have to eliminate those aspects and make it just about the conversation that's happening right then. And so that was something, being able to work with these Adams Wood and Francine Cavanaugh, these Verite style filmmakers on this last tour, was a real honor, because they really encouraged me to stay present, not to just abruptly have to end an interview ever, keep it going. You know, we're just there, we're filming, it's real, it doesn't matter how long it takes, we're just gonna sit and be present and have these real conversations, and we'll cut it down later, you know. And that's something that I really have appreciated on this last series, is not so much worrying about what the schedule even says, but we didn't have a lot of time, and these are very much glimpses. And so depending on whether I had an hour or a half a day or a day with these women, it wasn't as long as one would hope to film a documentary, which can take very long sometimes. So really had a glimpse into the reality of these women's lives, into their day-to-day, and they invited me into their homes, or they invited me on tours of their community to show me where the infrastructure was around their children's schools, where the wells were by their homes or communities. And when I started out, I had specific questions that I would ask, but with this series, I really tried to focus more on allowing whatever question I asked to come from the previous answer that they gave me. So it really was just a conversation. I wasn't just like, all right, this question, thank you for that answer. Now the next question. It really was just a free-flowing conversation where I'm often crying, I'm laughing. We leave that friends. I would joke kind of, but I become in love with all of these people that I've interviewed, and it's just because we're so open that moment. And I think that I hope that they know that I truly care about them and care about their story and care to help them get their story out there and help them with this plight, that these issues that they're dealing with in their community. I mean, I'm not there to make a film. I'm there to meet these women. I'm there to listen to them. And I'm oftentimes the first person that's come to listen to them.
Yeah. So it's so interesting, because it's the same thing repeating itself, which is, first of all, it's being really clear about why you're doing this, and whether it's with the film, like, I'm doing this because I want to make an impact. I want these women's stories to be heard and to, for people to know what's going on, or within a specific conversation. It's not about, can I get the best conversation for film, or can it look the best? It's, I want to connect deeply with each person I'm talking with, to be present, to give space, to give permission for real conversations to be had. It just keeps coming back to this clarity around the vision and around what's most important.
100%. That is what I'm doing. And that's what has been really nice. And even folks that have gone on to other things that have said they want that. They've noticed. I one woman that I've worked with on a few of the films as an advisor, and she has said that she now, in all of her conversations, just tries to be there with that person and listen. And she's noticed different responses from people that she never expected she could get. And she's making these friends, and she's like, and she tells me these stories and calls and says, this is because of you. And I'm like, you're crazy. But it's nice that the Climate Listening Project has, you know, not only given me an opportunity to listen to these people's stories, but also with the hope that the people watching, they have that space, that they have that presence, you know, that they're able to listen to these women, and that they have somebody to talk with as well, or to connect back into the project, or that the advisors are going out you know, and listening more, or even the filmmakers. Just everybody listening is good, I think.
It is. I was talking with my husband about this with interviewing, because I was just telling him how I can do an interview that's about an hour long, where I'm only asking questions for pretty much the whole time, not sharing a huge amount about myself. But at the end of the interview, there are many times when the person I'm interviewing feels really connected, feels...
Yes.
and I think it's because we don't get that opportunity very often to truly be listened to truly be seen, to feel truly seen. So when we offer that to somebody else, it's an incredible gift, and it does create a really deep connection.
Oh my goodness, yes. And what you're doing, it is listening. It is definitely. And from folks like me that you're listening to, I've learned from you. I'm taking that out and thinking more about my art in a different kind of intentional way because of what I've listened to from your other shows and other ways that you've listened to others. So it's beautiful that there's so many different ways that we can be more present and listening and making people feel that way in our daily lives, to filmmaking, podcasts, and all the different arts. I love it.
Yeah. What are some of your fears around creating and filmmaking?
Physical fears, I'll start with that. I mean, when I'm on the road, say we're driving through Texas or some of the places on this tour, and we were actually being followed by trucks. We were being followed by men in trucks that would tell us that we couldn't film there. We, you know, get out of here. We're just on public roads. We weren't ever on any private properties. One time a group of men came up to us to tell us that company is our friends, you know, you're not our friends. And here I am with a woman who lives in the community, you know, she's very much a part of that community. So there are definitely
How do you respond to that?
We're sorry, we're on public property. And I mean, we just hope that they don't do anything to us.
Yeah.
We've not had to like call the police or anything like that. Often, usually we go ahead and go get out of there. You know, we've been followed. And I remember leaving a coal plant, a coal ash pond, and there was a coal ash truck that I thought it was going to hit us. It came so close to us from behind, and then it swerved to the left like it was going to, you know, kind of pass us, but then it didn't. I mean, we're on just a little 2-lane road, country road. That was scary, but yeah, they stopped. They just did it, I guess, to do it, and that was it, and we drove on. So yeah, there's definitely actual fears being out there. Another physical actual fear is that I'm traveling to the most toxic places in the United States. I went to a place in California where the largest methane leak ever in the United States history took place. You could still very much feel the impacts in the air. My throat got more coarse, you know, my voice. I had my nose was bleeding. I felt depleted, you know, just didn't feel well at all. Other places that we would travel to for the story we want, you know, out in New Mexico, where there's just a culture of extraction there in the Native American communities. And you can actually see that cloud of methane from space. It's a very dense area there where there's just constant leaks from old infrastructure and new development as well. And so some of these places are concerned for my health. I mean, I came back from the 2 months on the road to a 100-year drought in my home state and the forest fires surrounding my home, causing code purple bad air warnings. And so even in my own backyard, though, are the impacts of climate change and the fossil fuel industry. It's a very real fear of climate change, of the fossil fuel industry. So I'm just, you know, going out there, trying to film it, being in those situations of being kind of threatened and, you know, shooed away, and then dealing with the direct access to these pollutants, and then being just daily worried of, am I doing enough, right? I, like anybody, you know, am I doing enough? So am I getting enough of these stories out there? Am I, how can I do more? How can I do better by these people that I've interviewed? Is this all garbage? Wait before you release it. That's always a fun couple of days. But, you know, you get through that one. That's the littlest fear.
You know, it's the littlest fear, but it's often the biggest fear. Like, honestly, I find the scariest part of doing interviews is sending the email where I'm inviting the person to be part of the podcast. That's scarier for me than the actual interview. It's like the whatever it is, it's the step where you just have to go beyond what you're comfortable with.
Right.
And do it anyway.
Yeah.
And thank God. I mean, really, like, thank God that you have those fears and you do it anyway so that we get the films and we get the stories. And that, I think, is that's the most important message in my mind is, like, I don't know. I feel like I can't hear it enough. Every single person goes through the same fears. They might sound a little bit different, but they're the same fears, really. And thank God there are so many people who are willing to keep moving through the fear in order to get their work out into the world and make that impact. So tell me about a story with someone that you have filmed, that you've talked with, that is particularly meaningful to you, to bring that home to us, to give us the visual through audio and make it personal in that way.
My latest film series is called The Story We Want. It's part of the Climate Listening Project, and it has changed my life. I did a tour at the end of last year. It was a 2-month tour, and I had the opportunity to go across America listening to women who are fighting against fossil fuel industries, fighting the pollution in their communities and the climate change impacts that they're already seeing. That is in partnership with the Moms Clean Air Force. And I remember getting that call before the election asking if I could go on the road for 2 months and make videos about call to vote. And so that's what we set out to do, was the calls to vote. But I hired this amazing filmmaking crew to work with me who had made this documentary called On Coal River, Adams Wood and Francine Cavanaugh. So we hit the road and I saw things and I listened to things, you know, that keep me up at night. The reality for people across the United States in dealing with these issues in their community is very much real.
Talk to me about one of the things that you saw that really has stayed with you.
So in North Carolina, a woman named Tracy, she is one of the most inspiring women that I have ever met. Her mother had started to see people in their community sick beyond the norm, and she started tracking it and writing these people's names down. And that was it at that time. But then when her mother passed away, Tracy took it up and became a connector, a voice in her community. So she shared her story with me about having strokes and heart attacks. She's 40. She's young. And with my personal history of cancer in my family, I was shocked and appalled by the extent of suffering that is happening across the United States, the reality for these women. And they weren't environmentalists, but Tracy is an amazing connector, and she fought against fracking in her community and rallied the community to vote out the county commissioners that were trying to frack in her community. They had come in and done a test drill. And this community is already a community that has a very, very large coal plant and an extensive amount of coal ash ponds that are poisoning the drinking water. And so I saw her and I went to church with her and we had a vigil. And when she sang, and it's actually what at the beginning of the North Carolina film is Tracy singing about breaking her chains.
There is power in the name of Jesus. There is power in the name of Jesus. To break every chain, break every chain, break every chain.
And I realized the chains that these women are in, and even in my own life, I just never felt so connected to anyone. And I remember starting, Tracy was the first woman that I interviewed on the tour. It set the tone for the tour for me, even though I have a high risk of cancer in my family. I went to places that are the most toxic places in this country, where we had the nation's largest ever methane blowout, where these large coal ash ponds are polluting the water and the air. I went where in New Mexico, you can see the cloud of methane from space. It's from the leaks and the horrible pollution that's happening there and a culture of extraction. I went to 8 states listening to these women and being able to share their stories has been the hardest thing that I've ever done. But it's people like Tracy that are suffering, I mean, way more than I am, fighting in the day to day. I mean, I'm going there, I'm listening, and I'm sharing her story. And although I try to be involved as much as I can in my local community and take action and volunteer and be a connector, I never knew that I would be going on this tour and seeing what I saw. You know, going on TV with an animal and telling people why they should care is one thing, but listening to a woman's story of why she's fighting for her children and the health of her community and the damage that's being done there and sharing that, I had to make these films. And so we made 5 documentaries as well as the Call to Vote videos. I had to get these out there. And it's been such a hard year for me in trying to tell people what is happening out there and why we should care about children in this country. It's similar to working at the Humane Society when you just realize, like, why don't people care? Why don't people care about Tracy and her children? Why don't people care about the thousands and thousands, tens of thousands, I mean, hundreds of thousands, I don't even know, but like, so many people live directly near pollution that is hurting us, and why don't we care? It has changed me so much in just seeing what's out there. And I keep saying, once we release this final documentary, I will feel lighter because I will have gotten it off my heart and out into the world. You know, this art, it needs to go out there.
Yeah.
You know?
So I definitely want to make sure that we get to when people who do care, what can they do? So we're going to talk about that in a minute. Before that, I just want to say, you know, I met you in person because I saw the screening of Story We Want. And one thing that was really powerful for me was you are so full of joy. Like, you laugh a lot and you fill the room with light and with love. And that was clearly, I mean, I only met you briefly, but that was definitely a sentiment that people shared about you. And so here you are talking about this was the hardest year and you are this being of joy. So how, with art, with creativity, we often have to go to those hard places. We have to be awake, be conscious, and consciousness can be hard. And yet you have found, you bring a lightness to it. How do you do that?
I'm not going to quit. I'm not going to stop. And I'm going to listen, and I'm going to share these stories, and I'm going to shine a light on them. I have my slogan for the Climate Listening Project. I started that 3 years ago. It was connecting hopeful conversations on climate and community. And I very much feel that need to be hopeful. I feel the doom. I feel it. in my heart. I'm even crying right now talking about it. I mean,
yeah, why? What makes you?
I'm just like a deep feeler. And when 200 people showed up to watch these women's stories, it filled my heart up. It's the idea that I'm listening is fine, but the idea that you all were there to listen to them as well, that, thank you. You know, that is what, that's what I hope. And that's all any artist can hope is, right? You make, and I'm not doing this for recognition. I'm not doing this for money, or I don't even know what the other good things that could happen are, but I'm doing it so that I can meet people like you, Daphne, so that I can meet as many people as possible and hopefully give a little bit of hope. And I just, you know, I think that fear of not being able to tell these stories, or not getting them out there, or not being able, not having time, or I don't know, it instead of shutting me down, it makes me want more. It makes me want to listen more. It makes me want to do more, to create more. Even through the pain, I have to know that it's Tracy's love for her children that is what is driving her. It's people's need for food, that it's that farmer loving the land. It's the people that are conservative, they're Republican, they're, you know, they're not necessarily what we would think, okay, this is what an environmentalist should be in today. I mean, years ago it was different, but today these lines that are drawn. But when they tell me that this bird, this wood thrush, that they want to hear every spring, and they value this bird with two vocal cords coming into their backyard, and they want to it to still be there in years to come for their children, and that all these people are connected by these things that we love and these things that we need, it gives me hope. It makes my heart full, and it wants me to tell the world about it, that there's more that connects us than divides us, and there's more that we, if we look and we listen, there's more that we can do to help these people if we just care, if we just realize that we are all connected.
Yeah. Okay. So now you have me crying. And so what do we do? We care. So what do we do?
We share our stories. That's why my new series for the Climate Listening Project is called The Story We Want. We have to share our stories. So now take to social media. If you are inspired to, contact your representatives. You know, write, make art, go out into the world, talk with your neighbors, talk at work with people, and listen to them. Listening is the most important thing, I think, right now, is just being open and realizing that as people, we have the ability to talk and listen and to make changes. We've come far in advancements with our tools to be able to connect us. And so the more that we can connect and see these things that we love and that we need, we can share our stories, be inspired by Tracy, be inspired by the women in these films who are scared to share their stories, but they're doing it anyway. I would definitely encourage people to go to events, get involved in the community, whether it's through art, it's through anything, the environment. There's so many different ways to connect that we realize then that all of these things are also connected. The bad things are too. You know, climate change is a health issue. Climate change is a water issue, a clean water, clean air issue. It is an issue of our children's health and safety. It's a food security and access issue. It is about the nature that we love. It's about all of these things. So it applies in your work. It makes sense to talk about it at work, to talk about it at home. The things that we do in our daily lives, whether we intend it to or not, everything we do has a footprint and an impact. And so we just try to listen to each other and listen to what the earth needs so that we can progress and be amazing. And humans are amazing creatures. I think sometimes think of ourselves as separate from the earth in some way, and we're not. We are very much a part of our environment. We need it. It needs us. It needs our help. So just listen. Listen to nature. Listen to each other and share your story, because you don't want somebody else to share your story for you or not to share your story at all. We need to share our stories, our history, and the reality of what is happening today so that we can make things better.
So with all of this, with all the films that you've made and the years that you have now devoted to filmmaking, how has filmmaking changed you?
Oh my goodness. It has changed me every time I've done it. The story we want has changed my life. I definitely needed months and months to recover even after that and process it just for myself, having been out there and seen, just to see what I saw and to know the reality out there, it impacted me greatly. And I think now that I know more and I learn to communicate in new ways, in different ways. I learn what I can take action on, what things I can do today, what I can, you know, how can I make more of an impact? How can I do this or do that or help these folks more? I mean, as far as traveling to new places, it changes you, I think, for the better. I think it makes me open. I've trekked through the jungle where jaguars and crazy wildlife lives, and without fear. I've gone up in a tiny little go-kart in the sky, a little air light plane, or I never thought that I would do that. It's given me strength also, you know, to be able to say, hey, guys that came over to tell us to leave, no, we can stay here, you know, like it's given me strength to do things I never thought that I would do, or to just be able to fight for these women and their stories as well. Given me the desire to travel and listen to more stories and figure out new ways. So it's a constant learning. It's a constant trying to be better so you're better for these people that you're listening to, you know?
Yeah. What I hear is that it's really expanded your idea of who you are and of how you can impact the world.
Definitely.
So the last thing is, what advice would you give to somebody who is passionate about creating change, maybe through filmmaking, maybe not, but they're just starting out and they're not sure where to begin?
I would say do it. Just do it. That's what I tell folks. I don't really know much about it all anyway, but what I do know is that I never really enjoyed waiting for a job to be open or something like that, for a job description, for somebody to tell me what to do or whatever. You know, folks come to me to partner, to collaborate, to get another side of things maybe that adds to something. And so we all are so unique. We all have our own thoughts, ideas, voices, talents to bring to the table. And if there's the artistic vision or there's the desire for impact, for positive change, or there's something that you're super passionate about, make that art. It wasn't until I just said, forget all the ways that I'm supposed to do things or whatever, or waiting to, okay, now I need to learn how to do this new thing. Like you mentioned, I just did it, you know, just started doing it, throwing the camera up there. And it wasn't always great, and it always still can be better. But any way that you can just make that art or share your voice, we need more people doing that.
Yeah, thank you. So normally, as I wrap up, I have a last question and a gratitude. And the last question, you really just answered. So the last question is typically, why is it important to make our thing? And you've really answered that. So unless you have anything more to say about that, I will move into this, the very last thing. Is there anything else you want to say to that?
All I would say is that, you know, when I picked up that first camera and filmed Bill McKibben, I had no idea what I was doing. When I went on this national tour, I had never done an 8-state tour before and made documentaries before. And do it. Just do it anyway, because your contribution is important.
Yeah, thank you. So the last piece is the gratitude for you. And you mentioned, Dana, oh, well, first, just again, to find out about Dana, to follow her, go to climatelisteningproject.org. And it'll be in the show notes. It'll be on the website at The Creativity Habit. But just check her out at climatelisteningproject.org. And then, Dana, you had mentioned the role of women and Wonder Woman, which I saw with my daughter this year. And you are like a living Wonder Woman. So it's true, because the thing about Wonder Woman is that she fights for what she believes in without any hesitancy whatsoever. She is 100% committed to what is in her, to fighting for what's in her heart. And that is exactly what you do every single day, even though it breaks your heart. It also breaks the chains that hold you back. And so that courage that you've had since you were little, going and in theater and then just doing it, going to the zoo, doing whatever it was that was needed and just following that knowing, that courage is now creating films about people's stories that are stories we need, desperately need to be hearing to make the change that we each need to make in this world. So thank you so much for being really what I see as a living Wonder Woman.
Oh my goodness. I just thank you so much for listening. And these women in these films, they're the Wonder Women, you know? And the people that listen to their stories and they feel empowered to share their stories, they are too. I'm grateful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm Daphne Cohn, and you've been listening to the Creativity Habit Podcast. To read about the daily routines and practices of artists and makers, go to thecreativityhabit.com. You can follow The Creativity Habit on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And if you haven't yet, go to iTunes Podcast and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. And then join me next week for another Creativity Habit podcast. Thank you for listening.